In the weeks that followed Lionel Crabbe's disappearance in Portsmouth Harbour, there were lots of theories as to what might have happened. And the most credible was that he ended up in the Soviet Union. You'll remember how Crabbe's wartime diving buddy, Sidney Knowles, was convinced he was going to defect. And there's Margaret Crabbe. She was sure her ex-husband was living in the Soviet Union. And there's also the claim from an unnamed Soviet officer that Crabbe was being held in a Moscow prison. And then, 50 years after Lionel Crabbe went missing, a very different story emerged from the Soviet Union. And once again, it's hard to know if it's true or false. It's centered on a man nearing the end of his life, a man named Edward Koltsov. In 2007, Edward Koltsov came forward and claimed to have been a KGB agent aboard Khrushchev's vessel back in 1956. More importantly, he was one of only two eyewitnesses who saw Crabbe on the morning he disappeared. There's quite a bit about Koltsov online, even a photo, and he looks quite distinguished with thinning silver hair and an angular nose, and he's wearing a smart dark blue jacket. So I call up my researcher in Moscow, Masha, my friend with the cropped hair and silver rings, ask if she can find out more about him, root around on the Russian language internet, stuff I can't access here in the UK.
Okay, no problem. I've got contacts in that world. So I'll do some digging and I'll let you know as soon as I find anything.
This is exactly what Masha's good at, using her network of people in the know.
I am sure there will be something. Let me see what I can do.
Brilliant. You're an absolute star, as ever.
I am. Okay.
All right, see you.
See you soon.
Bye.
And just a few days later, she gives me a call. She's got some information about Edward Koltsov, the one who worked for the KGB.
He was a pensioner living in the Rostov, North Caucasus.
You may have heard of it. It's a provincial city close to the Black Sea. We normally pronounce it Rostov. And if you look at photos, it looks very Russian, all imperial mansions and onion-domed churches. And this Edward Koltsov, what did he do before he retired?
He previously worked as a bus driver.
But here's the odd thing about Koltsov. For years, he said nothing about his time in Portsmouth Harbour, about what happened there.
Because this whole story, he was supposed to keep it as a secret.
But then one day in 2007, he's 74 years old by this point, he gives a single interview to a Russian TV channel called REN TV. This programme, it's all about Khrushchev's visit to Britain in 1956, about the disappearance of Lionel Crabbe. And at its heart is the interview with Koltsov. But there's a problem. This programme, it's vanished from the internet. It's certainly not on Russian YouTube, where most programmes end up. But Masha loves a challenge, and she sets to work, and she calls me again a few days later with triumph in her voice. She's found it. Masha tells me she's soon coming to London. That way we can watch it together. Before she ends the call, Masha reveals something intriguing. This Koltsov, she says, in the interview, he's got something on his mind, something that's been troubling him all his life.
So that he is old enough, he didn't want to take it to his grave because he wanted to come clean.
Not only come clean, but confess. Edward Koltsov claims to know exactly what happened to Lionel Crabbe. And this interview, he wants to make it his final confession. But can he be trusted? I'm Giles Milton, and from Something Else and Sony Music Entertainment, this is Cover Up Season 1, Ministry of Secrets, Episode 5, The Confession of Edward Koltsov.
Springtime is all about fresh air, fresh starts, and freshly clean homes. And it's the perfect time to give a fresh look at Simply Safe Home Security. The home security system many of the most anxious people I know recommend. Here's why people love it. Trusted by experts, SimpliSafe was named Best Home Security System for 2024 by U.S. News & World Report. And Newsweek awarded it Best Customer Service in Home Security. The system blankets your whole home in protection. It has sensors to detect break-ins, fires, floods, and more. Plus a variety of indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch over your property, day and night. It's backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than $1 a day, so you get fast emergency response and dispatch when you need it most. SimpliSafe has given many of our listeners real peace of mind. I want you to have it too. Get 20% off any new SimpliSafe system when you sign up for Fast Protect Monitoring. Just visit simplisafe.com/coverup. That's simplisafe.com/coverup. There's no safe like SimpliSafe.
In all the years I've been looking into the Lionel Crabbe mystery, I've come across many characters who seem to be implicated in some way. The hardest thing has been to work out who's reliable and who isn't. Who can you trust? Before we pick up the story of that Soviet pensioner, Edward Koltsov, I want to return to where we left off in the last episode, in the House of Commons, during a fiery debate about Lionel Crabbe in May 1956. On the very day when the Prime Minister, Anthony Eden, was facing that grilling about the fate of Lionel Crabbe, an unexpected figure was spotted by a journalist from the Daily Mirror. And this is what he subsequently wrote.
There was a silent figure in the gallery of the House of Commons last night. He was 54-year-old Admiral, the Earl Mountbatten, the first Sea Lord.
The Earl Mountbatten, better known as Lord Louis Mountbatten, the head of the Royal Navy. And as he sits there in the public gallery, he's looking positively regal with his swept-back hair, aquiline nose, and piercing aristocratic gaze. He's listening attentively to the words of the Prime Minister.
I am not prepared to discuss these matters in this House.
The journalist from the Daily Mirror was less interested in the Prime Minister's words than in the presence of Lord Mountbatten. And in his article, underneath a huge photo of Mountbatten, he posed two questions.
Does Mountbatten know the answer? Is he the only man in the world who knows the full facts of the mission and the fate of Commander Crabbe?
Those questions. Within days, newspapers were filled with stories and speculation about Mountbatten. And they seemed to be suggesting that he might not be trustworthy, even though he's head of the Navy. So who was he? If you watched the TV series The Crown, you may remember him from the first three seasons. He was a cousin and confidant of the young Queen Elizabeth, a father figure to Prince Philip, a surrogate grandfather to King Charles when he was still a young prince. They loved him, and they called him Dickie. It was the family nickname. And Dickie, he'd become famous. Here he is in a TV interview he gave in 1969.
You now get recognised, you go into a restaurant, you may get better service, but you also get people coming up with autograph books. You can't easily go into a theatre without people coming up. And, of course, one's inundated with fan mail.
So could he have had any connection to Lionel Crabbe?
Well, Louis Mountbatten is one of the most extraordinary members of the royal family.
This is Andrew Lowney, author, historian, and best-selling biographer of Lord Mountbatten. He's got light curly hair, a kindly smile, and a look on his face that suggests he's always willing to help out. And Lowney, he spent 30 years researching Mountbatten. He knows everything there is to know about him.
He had a separate career outside his royal duties, rising to be the Chief of Combined Operations during the war, to be Supreme Allied Commander of Southeast Asia, to be the last Viceroy of India, and eventually Chief of Defence Staff.
In public, he was the very picture of the Whitehall establishment.
He seemed very authoritative. He always, you know, looked the part. In fact, that was why he went to India, you know, impressive in his uniforms, a great leader of men, very charming, very good at getting people to work together, a great speaker.
So that's the public figure. But what about the man himself? It turns out he had a hidden life.
Well, Macbeth was a very complex man, but actually, privately, he was a much more vulnerable and sensitive man. There were problems in his marriage. Both he and his wife were bisexual.
A fact that was not widely known.
This was at a time when you would be thrown out of the Navy if you were found to be homosexual. And so he had this dark secret that he carried throughout his life, but he was protected by the Navy.
This was his big secret, a secret he kept hidden. And this perhaps was not so difficult, because gay sex, though illegal, was commonplace in the Navy. Mountbatten's secret was not an uncommon one. So Mountbatten's bisexual, and as I've said earlier, Lionel Crabbe is bisexual too. And they were both in the same small world of Navy special ops in the Second World War. So I can't help wondering if Mountbatten knew Crabbe. Could he have been involved in Crabbe's diving mission in Portsmouth Harbour? And on the face of it, it all sounds credible. But there's nothing to prove his involvement. And what's more, Mountbatten categorically denied any connection with Crabbe's disappearance. So I go back to Andrew Lowney, Mountbatten's biographer, and I ask him, is there any sort of paper trail that implicates Mountbatten in the Crabbe affair, that links the two men?
You would have thought he kept everything. He kept his school reports from the age of four. So why is there nothing relating to Crabbe? But it's very interesting that the Mountbatten papers, there are thousands of pages there, and there's no references to any of this Crabbe stuff.
Lowney's looked everywhere in those Mountbatten papers and diaries.
35,000 pages.
And found nothing. And this is strange, because Mountbatten kept a meticulous account of his life, recorded everything in his private diary. Yet there's not a single entry about Lionel Crabbe. Is Mountbatten's involvement in the Crabbe story yet another unfounded rumour? In all of this, who can be trusted to tell the truth?
The Hargan women seemed to have it all.
We were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But detectives would soon discover...
Inside the house, there were the bodies of two women.
A story of betrayal you would struggle to believe if it wasn't true.
I am just praying to God, this is a sick joke.
From 48 Hours, this is Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings, wherever you get your podcasts.
Have you ever felt like escaping to your own desert island? Jane Gaskin did exactly that, trading in the family home to begin a new life in the tropics. But she soon discovers that paradise has its secrets. I'm Alice Levine, and this is The Price of Paradise, the island dream that ends in kidnap, corruption, and murder. Wish you were here? Follow The Price of Paradise now, wherever you listen to podcasts.
In the last episode, we heard how the story of Lionel Crabbe's disappearance took on a life of its own, became the subject of a press frenzy. There was a great deal of speculation, but very few facts, and even fewer people you could trust. If there's someone out there who can be trusted, it's the word of a rational scientist, one who's investigated countless high-profile mysteries in the course of his working life, and many of them attracting huge media attention. He's called Dr. Richard Shepherd, and he's Britain's leading forensic pathologist. His expertise isn't just dealing with a body on a mortuary slab. He also looks at facts and analyses the evidence, cuts through the rumours, fake news, and conspiracy theories.
They develop in a vacuum, don't they? Always conspiracies. I seek, whenever I do a case, the truth as best as I can establish it.
Dr. Shepherd is in his late 60s with a gentle, reassuring voice.
A cup of coffee, a cup of tea.
One of those people who effortlessly inspires confidence. He looks like a regular guy in his short-sleeve sports top and grey slacks. And he's got the steady hands of a clock restorer, which happens to be his hobby and passion.
London bombing. You know, we're talking to people about what are the identifying features.
His study is filled with perfectly synchronised antique clocks. For Dr. Shepherd, accuracy is everything.
The gallbladder being removed, the appendix being removed, what scars were present.
Dr. Shepherd's worked on a staggering 26,000 cases in the course of his career. 9/11, 7/7, that's the bomb attacks on London's public transport. He's worked on all sorts of cases, many of which gave rise to conspiracy theories. And Dr. Shepherd, he got to the truth of every one of them.
Thank you very much for asking me to think about this, because I knew about...
Dr. Shepherd knows a bit about the disappearance of Lionel Crabb. Says it's strikingly similar to the most high-profile case he's ever done.
I suppose if I wanted to find an equivalent in my career, it would be Diana.
Princess Diana, killed in that fatal car crash in Paris on the last day of August 1997.
A short while ago, Buckingham Palace confirmed the death of Diana, Princess of Wales.
I still remember waking up to the news.
The princess died following a car accident in Paris. She was 36.
Now, in that case, in fact, I was involved in the analysis of not just her death and her post-mortem, but of the car crash and the vehicle and peripheral spin-offs from that.
Those peripheral spin-offs, Dr. Shepherd means the conspiracy theories. And in the case of Princess Diana, just as in the case of Lionel Crabb, the press were clamouring for information. And in the absence of facts, well, they filled it with speculation.
Princess Diana's death wasn't an accident. As mystery
Diana was pregnant at time of her death.
Couple says crash that killed Princess Diana was an establishment
Diana
thing.
Told of plot to kill her.
Paris car she was travelling in when killed was a hugely dangerous rebuilt wreck.
Diana's life could have been saved, says Doctor.
And before you know it, conspiracy theories like these take on a life of their own. Because people love to speculate, and it no longer matters if they're true or false. Richard Shepherd again.
People love conspiracies, because that's fiction, that's fun, and what the hell does it matter? You know, I can suggest this, and I have a bit of a laugh down the pub, or now on Facebook or whatever, but, you know, the ripples go backwards and forwards, and can be damaging, can be hurtful, and sometimes just bloody irritating.
And with Princess Diana, just like the Lionel Crabb mystery, the conspiracies got bigger and bigger. The different versions of the story were spinning dangerously out of control. And so it's 2004, and a special inquiry is launched, and Richard Shepherd gets the call, and he's given one goal: to get to the truth. And that's what he does. He examines everything forensically. And his conclusions? This is Lord Stevens, who oversaw Operation Paget, the Princess Diana inquiry. I've asked an actor to read his words.
I want to emphasise that the report and the inquiry was all about looking at the conspiracy theories. There have been a number of allegations which have been unfortunate. Those allegations have been very hurtful. The verdict has been clear. There is no conspiracy in relation to this matter.
Those conspiracy theories about Princess Diana, they were all false. There were no plots, no assassination. She died in a car crash because she wasn't wearing a seatbelt. End of story. Dr. Shepherd warns that the Crabb case is even more complex than the Diana one, because the truth about Lionel Crabb is being deliberately concealed. Whitehall has been covering up the truth from the word go, claiming Crabb died during underwater trials in Stokes Bay. But this cover-up, says Shepherd, might yet prove their undoing, because there will be holes in their story.
It is much easier to tell the truth with its complexities than to try and put a story together that is watertight. And as so many people have found, when you start to try and put a story together, it is incredibly hard to keep it secure and safe and challengeable.
Whitehall will have made mistakes. There'll be cracks in their cover-up. And inside those cracks, quite possibly, lies the truth. But let's go back to Lionel Crabb himself, missing, presumed dead. Was he actually living in the Soviet Union, as his ex-wife said? Did he defect to the Soviet Union, as his best friend said? Was he being held in prison, as that Soviet officer said? Or is there another explanation for his disappearance? Does that Russian pensioner I mentioned earlier, Edward Koltsov, does he hold the clue to what really happened to Lionel Crabb?
Welcome to True Spies, the podcast that takes you deep inside the greatest secret missions of all time.
Suddenly out of the darkness appeared Bin Laden.
You'll meet the people who live life undercover. What do they know? What are their skills? And what would you do in their position?
Vengeance felt good. Seeing these people pay for what they'd done felt righteous.
True Spies from Spyscape Studios, wherever you get your podcasts.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Ah, that's Marcia. That'll be Marcia. Hey, hello.
It's been a couple of weeks since I spoke with Marcia, my Russian friend, and now she's at my house.
How are you? How was the flight?
You don't want to know.
OK. When we last chatted on the phone, she told me about Edward Koltsov, the mysterious KGB diver, the one who was on Khrushchev's vessel when it sailed into Portsmouth Harbour in 1956. Who gave a single TV interview for a Russian documentary about his role in the Lionel Crabb affair.
How long is it? It's
45 minutes.
Wow.
Marcia's brought her laptop with its Russian alphabet keyboard.
Oh, there he is.
Yeah.
And suddenly, it's as if Edward Koltsov is in the room.
This journalist also says that he appears very credible, like the way he talks.
He's got quite a high-pitched voice, but he speaks confidently, in a measured way, like he's prepared himself for what he's about to say.
He's very calm and kind of not trying to prove anything. He just tells his story. This whole story is so weird.
I ask Marcia to rewind to the beginning, to start with the arrival of Khrushchev and his entourage in Portsmouth, to go through it line by line.
So what he said, what's he saying?
That it was important that only few people were aware that they were actually working for special services, and the rest of the crew, they had no idea.
Koltsov then explains how he woke early on the morning of Lionel Crabb's dive, the 19th of April, was up long before dawn. And just as it was starting to get light, about 6 or 6.30 in the morning, he's summoned to the commander of the Soviet ship, the Orjonikidze.
He was given an order to dive because there was some strange activity in the water, and there were some also noises like banging on this kind of
on the hull of the ship.
And this is important because Koltsov is claiming that the diver in the harbour, whoever it is trying to stick a mine onto the hull of the Soviet vessel, some sort of time delay mine, to detonate as they were sailing back to Russia. This sends everyone on board the ship into total panic because they have to stop this crazy British plot urgently. So Koltsov, he's a trained diver, and he's in his wetsuit within seconds, arms himself with a knife.
And he dived and saw somebody in the water.
That person, he says, was swimming very close to the surface. And what happens next? Koltsov's a pro. He doesn't mess around.
So he pulled him by the legs. He pulled him down. And then after he cut his throat, he was a bit freaked out for a moment, thinking that he killed a child. This person was very small in stature, so he thought for a moment that it was a child.
And it's true, Lionel Crabb was small. He was only about 5'4".
But then, he says, then he saw the diver's face and saw his wrinkles and realised it wasn't a child, but a grown man.
So Koltsov checks to make sure the diver's dead, which he is, and lets him sink to the bottom. And then he resurfaces and clambers aboard, and everything goes quiet for a few days. It's like nothing ever happened. Because Khrushchev is still in London, and it's not until he's back in Portsmouth and has been debriefed about the incident that, well, he's full of praise for Koltsov.
He was rewarded for this assassination, but it was kind of kept a secret, so he wasn't even allowed to mention that he had this reward.
It was a medal, wasn't it?
Not medals, order. It's
like called an honorary sort of thing.
So let's just recap a minute. According to Koltsov, he spots someone in the water, he jumps in and slashes his throat, kills him, and clambers back aboard. But how do we know he's telling the truth? I mean, this random guy pops up from nowhere, confesses to a murder, and makes it all sound quite plausible. So I get back in touch with Dr. Shepherd, the forensic pathologist who worked on the Princess Diana inquiry.
What claimed to be an ex-KGB professional diver, he claims to have...
And I tell him about Koltsov's mysterious confession.
To have dived into the water,
grab
Crab by the...
And I can see he's already frowning.
Slash open his throat and kill him.
Well, I like that story. I think that sounds perfect. I mean, sorry. Is that the end? Is that the end of it, Giles, or is there more excitement to come?
If you were taking on this case, this was the evidence you've been given. What would you be looking for? What would you examine, basically?
I struggle with the practicalities of it, and I do like things that are relatively simple. And certainly, in my experience with all sorts of murders and killings and things like that is, you know, complicated ones really tend not to work well.
And this is the moment when Koltsov's story starts to fall apart. Dr. Shepherd says if you want to disable someone...
And you've got the advantage of surprise, then, you know, sticking a knife several times into their chest is, you know, does bugger your breathing a bit. But why cut the throat when stabbing would achieve... much the same end.
And then there's Lionel Crabb's rubber diving suit and rubber hood.
Layers of rubber make it harder, particularly if they actually aren't fixed together. If they move, you know, when you cut one, it slides a bit across the top. So that would make it harder. But once again, I wouldn't preclude it.
How easy would it be to kill somebody underwater in the dark and in murky water?
I mean, English waters are not known for their clarity, and I would guess in a harbour, you know, with all of the shit that was pumped out into the harbours in those days. I mean, no, I think visibility would be almost nil.
In the course of your long career, have you come across these sorts of types, these fantasists, who come forward out of nowhere and suddenly announce their involvement in a story?
Yes, people do, for no good reason, insert themselves into the investigation. Sometimes the criminals insert themselves into an investigation, but other times fantasists roll up. It can be quite difficult sometimes to pick through and show that they weren't involved.
So Dr. Shepherd's heard all the evidence, and I ask him a final question. How true does he think Koltsov's confession is?
I would say it's less than 10% likely to be true. It doesn't really have the ring of truth.
So where does that leave the Lionel Crabb mystery? The endless rumours, the speculation, the media frenzy gripping the country back in 1956. Had Crabb defected to the Soviet Union, been captured by the KGB and was now languishing in a prison in Moscow? Was Mountbatten somehow involved in his disappearance? There's one obvious reason why all these stories have taken hold in the public imagination. And that's because in the weeks and months after Lionel Crabb disappeared, his body was never discovered. There was no corpse, no evidence. Crabb had simply vanished, and he'd done so without leaving a single clue. Next time on Ministry of Secrets, we'll be fast-forwarding to 1957, and everything we've heard so far is about to be blown apart by a sensational discovery.
Well, we were going down yesterday morning for a day's fishing, and when we started up the engine, I noticed this object floating in the water.
Want the full story? Unlock all episodes of Cover Up Ministry of Secrets ad-free right now by subscribing to The Binge, all episodes all at once. Plus, you'll unlock brand new stories dropping every month. That's all episodes all at once, all ad-free. Just click subscribe on the top of the Cover Up Ministry of Secrets show page on Apple Podcasts or visit getthebinge.com to get access wherever you listen. Find out more about The Binge and other podcasts from Sony Music Entertainment at sonymusic.com/podcasts. Cover Up Season 1 Ministry of Secrets is a Something Else and Sony Music Entertainment production. It's hosted and written by me, Giles Milton. The producer is Sarah Peters. The junior producer is Martha Miller. The production coordinator is Ike Egbitola. Peggy Sutton is the story consultant. Jeremy Wormsley composed the original music with mixing and sound design from Peregrine Andrews. Isis Thompson is the editor and executive producer. With thanks to actors Ginny Fiol, Peter Temple and Dominic Frisby and Tuning Fork Productions.